Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Education Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. Go to the website, TotalTutor.org, to find out more information on Total Education Network, now syndicated in 80-plus stations. It keeps growing. I had someone call me today looking to pick up the show. I just love this. It makes me excited every day to do this. And the people we're teaming up with is amazing. And the people I'm talking to teaming up with the Miami Book Fair International, we're doing so many awesome things. And the greatest thing about it is it started just on one station, and it's grown so much. And one person who I just, you know, I knew he was a colleague, and I said, you know, this guy knows education. I'm going to get him on the program. We have just been able to grow a network, and I want to welcome the program. Jared, how are you?
I'm doing great. And Neil, thank you for the wonderful introduction. It is almost unimaginable to think where we started with one station, one topic. Going back to those first shows, it's really amazing to think where this has gone.
I remember you didn't want to stay up for when we had to do the BTR shows back in the day, and where we're at now and who's listening. And I also want people to make sure that they friend me at Neil S. Haley, because I really think, Jared, we are under a huge attack in education, and I think this is the perfect time to have a talk show like this. It's the perfect time to go out and talk to people in all walks of life in education, you know, that value education, from celebrities to authors and entertainers, then to just the people. Just finding out, and through my Facebook, I come up with these things, and it really makes me frustrated, but I guess it makes me not be able to sleep, and that's the perfect topic to talk to you tonight about, Jared, is we're going to talk about specifically how to put our child to sleep. I think this is very important.
Well, and certainly it's probably a dilemma that every parent has faced. You know, there's so many, especially when you're the new parent. We adopted our child at 18 months. We faced our own sleep issues and sleep dilemmas with our little boy. But when you have just given birth and you're bringing your baby home from the hospital, you know, those things are really starting at that point. You know, you're already starting to work on, you know, how to get your baby to sleep on their own. It starts then, and it just moves up the chain, up the scale as they continue to get older.
Exactly, and I think that's why it's so great for book two. I can't believe we're saying this. We're already writing book two in this great journey, and we'll be talking about. But sleep, this is the concern I have about sleep. Is it, you know, it's the challenge when they're babies. It's a challenge when we first get them to say, okay, we're going to put them in our crib and we're going to close the door. But at one point in time, kids are like, you know what? I think mom and dad's bed is a little warmer than my little toddler bed, right?
Well, and you know, what you just mentioned for our listeners is probably something that everyone at some point who has been a parent or even babysat a child has been faced with. And you know, what you just mentioned is what we call sleep training. Sleep training was absolutely the preferred method, probably for 100 or more years, but particularly in the last century that we had the last 50, 60 years with pediatricians coming to the forefront, that was the method that was used. You bring your baby home, you feed your baby, and you put the baby into the crib, and you walk out and you close the door, and you permit your child to cry themselves to sleep. You know, certainly it is still recommended by many pediatricians. I personally don't recommend that to my families. Is it effective? Absolutely. Will it work? There's no question. Depends on how many days it'll take. For some children, it's 1 or 2 days. I've had families who have used the method and then have called me in, and they've tried it for 5 days before they've seen any kind of progress made toward it. It's sleeping is such a personal issue for families. We've talked about this many in many cultures. You would absolutely not permit your baby to fall asleep on their own. In the United States, this is incredibly controversial and particularly related to SIDS.
So your recommendation is that the family bed, not the family bed, but being near the family bed is the best way for putting a child to sleep for a pretty long time then, right? Not mean like a year or a year and a half.
Yes, and you know, in no way would I ever tell a parent that they should co-sleep with their newborn, especially. That is something that you know, regardless of you know where we are in the cultural perspective, yes, it's done in many cultures throughout the world. But in no way would I ever recommend that a parent does that. Here's what I've seen with sleep training, though. It does absolutely work with infants. I'm not sure about the long-term effects of it, and here's why I bring this up, Neil. Many times I'm called in to deal with behavioral issues related to sleeping with toddlers, not sleeping with toddlers, but about toddlers. What has happened is the parents have used the sleep training method while their child was in a crib, while their infant and early toddler was in a crib, child couldn't go anywhere. You know, so absolutely that was an effective method. Here's what they faced, though. When they transitioned from the crib to the toddler bed, they're now in the same place that they were really right from the beginning. The difference is now that toddler can easily get out of the bed. Sleep training is much more difficult at that point.
Right. So I'm a little bit, you know, at the effect of understanding this more. My daughter Anastasia, we're still sleep training, and she's at four, and it's like his process, and it's because of certain situations. She's three, but sneakiness, certain things that you know you don't want her upstairs alone in her toddler bed because she can come out and get in a lot of trouble, different things, wake up the whole family. So a lot of times, family issues lead to, I guess, a different way of getting them to sleep.
Well, and that's exactly right. And again, this might be the perfect example to use for our listeners. Did Anastasia go to sleep okay in her crib?
Yes, fine.
Okay, so now you can see this was exactly the kind of the anecdote that I was talking about. No issues with sleeping, particularly if there was sleep training was used while you were in the crib. And again, what you've done is, as parents, we've limited the child's access. Now you've made that transition to the toddler bed. Sleep training has not necessarily worked. Now you're faced with the dilemma of how do you do sleep training when the child can get up and freely walk around? Really brings up a lot of difficult circumstances for the parent. Now we go to the methods that I have suggested with parents that really begin way back when the child was a newborn, an infant as they were developing. Step one, recognize your child's cues, really, again, at infancy. You can tell many times when your child is becoming dysregulated, related to fatigue, related to sleep. Look for those cues, you know, rubbing their eyes, not being able to nurse or take the bottle. Do your best to make the child comfortable. Sometimes some children do best being really snug. Some children, on the other hand, do best having a little more freedom. And I'm speaking really, again, as infants. So now, step one, recognize those cues. Step two, work to get your child comfortable. It's a little bit controversial, but Neil, this has worked for nearly every family that I have done with beginning at the earliest stages. In the beginning, permit your child to fall asleep with you, your infant with you, after nursing, after the bottle feeding, while you're rocking them, holding them. I always recommend to parents, don't try to walk around with your infant. Try to get comfortable on a rocker, any kind of couch, chair that will help you. Let your child fall asleep on you, then transfer the child into the crib. See how that works. The next process, the next step within that is when your child is nearly asleep, now you transfer them to the crib. slight difference, and that is now you're giving your infant the chance to regulate on their own and fall asleep on their own. That's the significant difference. Once they've accomplished that, you slowly begin to do it for more and more, where you've fed your child, and now you move them to the crib. Now they're nearly almost fully awake. You're helping them learn to regulate on their own.
And that's very interesting. So you basically think that a lot of times when we rock kids to sleep, we have them use a pacifier to put themselves to sleep. They really aren't doing it on their own. That it becomes a problem because later when they can get out of the crib, they're like, well, I want the easiest way to go to sleep, so I'm going to go sleep with mom and dad. You're thinking that has something to do with it.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the child, the infant is just not capable of regulating those kinds of sensory experiences on their own. They absolutely need to have their parents, the caregiver, the grandparents help them do that. I mean, keep in mind, you know, this child has spent 40 weeks in the most comfortable environment, and that child did not want to leave that environment. Now, you know, if we're putting them out into the world, and you know, they're facing all kinds of elements: change in body temperature, sounds, lights. So many things have happened, but by you know, really, for most children, most infants, I should say, newborns, swaddling really works well for them, putting them nice and snug, nice and tight, and letting them fall asleep on you, and then gradually moving that away. Now, as they get older and they begin to move around, swaddling is not as effective because it really is, I believe the child perceives that as restraining. And again, we're still talking maybe at the 8 or 9 month level here, where the infant is rolling over, being able to transition into some different positions. Swaddling there is typically not effective. Again, it's very personal with how parents do put their children to sleep. Parents would probably may not agree with the method that my wife and I used. We took a very gradual process to helping our adopted son get to bed. And it's something we really don't have a problem with, but it may not now, that is. But in the beginning, we did. It may not feel comfortable to every parent. Again, it's what you want to do. There are some parents who will absolutely feel that the sleep training method is going to work for them. And you know what? It may very well be the best method for them to use.
Well, I think we're going to have a part two, and I think we want to kind of compare and contrast your method to the sleep method and ask why you think the other one works and kind of give us the pinpoint in this. And then we go into the process of issues with sleep. A great series for Jarrett involving sleep, and I don't sleep, but we'll learn more and more from how we can get our kids to sleep, because that's a key thing, because we need to have time with mom and dad or caregivers to be away from the kids all the time if they just constantly are not going to bed on their own. So I appreciate you calling, Jarrett. We'll be in touch, okay?
All right. Thank you, Neil.
All right. Take care, Jarrett. Okay. Bye-bye. All right. That was Jarrett. You're listening to the Toll Education Show on the Toll Education Network, and we will be back in just a moment. We're here at the Toll Education Show on the Toll Education Network, and we're going to be interviewing a Miami Book Fair author. And I tell you what, I just absolutely enjoyed my trip last year to the Miami Book Fair International. And I'm going to be highlighting authors, children's authors on the network and other shows, all other types of authors. But I want to welcome to the program Yumi, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You are the author and illustrator of Maui Under the Night Sky, a Lao story of home. And basically, it's a children's book. And I tell you, children's books in my house, they're very, very important to have around. We have so many children's books, and I have your book right here, and it's the illustration is beautiful. And I always like interviewing children's books authors, because you're the people that first expose kids to literacy and to learn to read, and I think that's fantastic.
Thank you so much. I feel the same way about children's books, and I think they're really for all ages, because parents and adults and teachers who are reading with children are also experiencing the story. So we really reach everyone.
Exactly. And I completely agree. So why did you become a children's book author? What motivated you to want to do that?
Well, great children's books as a child. I'm a reader, great librarians, spending most of my life feeling like I was in a story, I guess. But really what they brought to me, I wanted to give back. I was so proud when my first book was published and I went into the library and there it was. I felt like I was giving back to where I received so much of my information about the world. It turns out that I write stories that are based on real children and life experiences. And so I think that's another reason that I write. I'm trying to learn something about the world, and through children's eyes, I feel like they teach us a lot.
Definitely looking through children's eyes and seeing how they are and how they interact. And kids are more motivated, I guess, to read a children's book if it's about them, right?
Maybe so. Maybe so. I find children sort of voracious, and they're pretty interested in everything around them. But I think I remember, and I feel like adults can still access this feeling too, that sense of, I don't know very much about what's happening and how can I find out about it. So maybe not children's eyes, but a children's perspective, kind of a beginner's perspective. I guess I feel like it's a good place to start.
It makes you think, it makes you feel like when children read books and they know that they picture that's them in certain ways and they understand that. I think that it just absolutely gives them that motivation to keep turning the pages, especially when they finally start to read. When mom or dad or their grandparents or caregivers are reading the book to them, they're picturing it through the eyes of the child, which I think is fantastic. So tell me a bit about the story now, and not to give away the whole thing, because everyone has to go out and get a book, especially my listeners out there, because again, I see just it's very nice looking. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. Okay, Mali Under the Night Sky, it's about a real person named Mali Chansuk Konchao, and she remembers when she was 5 years old leaving Laos, the country that she was born in, and walking with her family to Thailand because of war in the country. And the story is really about what she brings with her from home, and really what all of us bring with us from our earliest experiences. I won't give away the end, but it's a happy ending. She faced struggles. And that goes back to what we were saying earlier about children identifying with children in books, that children face a lot of challenges, and it's really exciting for me to see children who come out from facing challenges in a positive way. So Mali Under the Night Sky is one of those stories. Mali is grown up now and doing well.
Very, very interesting. So basically going through struggles in life, and has any of the characters remind you of your childhood in a way from what you did, how you were?
I guess so, because, well, I grew up to be an artist, and it's the other reason that I love children's books is you get to put pictures into. I was always told I had to decide between writing and drawing as a career, and I couldn't stop myself from doing both. And I think that before we learn to read, we read pictures, and even still, there's the visual literacy can help us understand things across languages. And I'm especially interested in international stories and understanding across culture.
And from the illustrations, again, if you grew up wanting to be an artist, you really enjoyed drawing when you were a child. And did you illustrate any books on your own, like fun books when you were younger, that kind of gave you that motivation to want to do this?
Yes, thanks again to my wonderful elementary school teachers. I even went so far as to, you know, write my own about the author in second grade and put my picture on the back and write my own reviews about my books. I've been writing books since I could start. My parents were very encouraging, too. Staples and paper, that's all you. You don't even need the staples. Everyone can write a book. And then it's important to share them, too. So children and adults out there, share your stories. You don't need a lot of production to share them.
So nature also must be an important part of your life as well, being that we're talking about the night sky, that you're seeing nature in itself through a child's eyes, right?
That's a wonderful observation. She travels through the night as she was walking, but there is a lot of nature completely influences my artwork and my writing. Growing up in Miami, climbing in the mango tree, and just I spent a year in Laos, and it's very similar to South Florida in a lot of ways. So it was familiar. But also the closeness of nature and how that influences communities and how we organize ourselves as people.
It's very nice that you grew up in Miami and got to see, I believe nature, especially when I visited Miami, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous all the time there. And I guess the only thing you have to worry about are the hurricanes and sometimes the hot, sticky summer days. But I think that's such an important thing. Now, have you written any other children's books? Is this the first one?
I have. My first book was called C'est la vie, that is life, a Haitian story of hope. And that's the true story of children in Haiti who started their own radio station. I was able to visit them and work with them and show them drafts of the book and get their input on. I incorporated their artwork into the story. That was a Jane Addams National Book Award winner. And my other book is for older children. It's called Pitch Black, and that's another true story. It's sort of a young adult graphic novel. I met a man who lived in the subway tunnels of New York since he was a teenager, and he's also an artist. I guess my focus is creativity and survival.
Well, and what the international feel? Especially this being an international talk show, we're on in the UK, we're on in Jamaica, we're on in Canada, we're heard in 180 countries. But
hello world.
But tell me why the international feel about your books. What kind of drives you that way to really picture for children, especially in the United States, to see international illustrations and different things and how children in different cultures act and interact?
Thank you. I love that question, too. I think that we all have a lot to learn from each other. The United States is a very international country. We are from everywhere. But we don't always learn about what it's like to live in other places in a realistic way. That's my feeling. So I feel like there are a lot of strengths in the world that it would help U.S. kids to know about. And I also like to celebrate other people. I have a story about an American too. And I guess we all touch and affect each other. Maybe there's a certain amount of wanting to share some of that. Laos has an incredible history that a lot of Americans don't know about. I'm alternating between saying Laos and Lao. It's the Lao, the People's Democratic Republic of Laos, but it's also known as Laos, the French name for Laos, which is right by Vietnam and Thailand and Cambodia. So a lot of people say, where is that? And Haiti's been in the news a lot, and especially in Miami, we know Haiti's our neighbor, but there's still a lot of misinformation about Haiti. And so I think I'm certainly not the encyclopedia or the, I'm just one point of view, which is, but I'm one more voice sharing what I've learned about these countries. And I feel so enriched from what these countries have shared with me that I want to share.
Especially the melting pot of Miami, as I remember when I went, all the different cultures. And think about, especially even the United States in general, that there are people out there that just don't understand about the different cultures, and to kind of already get them interested in that and wanting to study international, to really be interested in social studies based on that, I think it's fantastic. So it really connects in a lot of ways your children's book, and that's great for people to ask more, maybe go on the internet and say, well, what's that picture about? Or what's that about? I think that's so important.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say that
go ahead.
All of my books, I generally have a little bit of the real information in the back about, you know, the photograph and a little more history and story to give a wider picture, and I agree to then get on the internet and find out more. It's really exciting, and to know that really all stories are alive in some way. I think I was thinking of many stories start once upon a time far in a place far away, but when we're talking about the world, we're getting closer and closer.
Exactly, and I think that's important. For now, I always ask any children's book author, how can, if especially our younger people who are listening that want to be children's book authors, what would you say would be the advice you would offer them so that they could have that success that you have?
I wrote down the word persevere until I got my first book published, and it took a long, long time and a lot of work. I would say don't stop writing, don't stop sharing your stories, illustrate, make your own books and share them with people. Don't let anything stop you. Just you may just have one book in you, you may have 100 books in you, but each story is important, and nobody else can tell it except you. So please share your stories, we need them.
Exactly, Yumi. And last point I wanted to make, Yumi, about the whole thing about the book and everything is specifically enough that you are able to really give people in art hope that there are careers out there, especially with you being an illustrator as well for your book, and that you probably are speaking out against lots of public education cutting art programs. I mean, that must make you very sad.
I definitely have. I've worked in the public schools as a visiting art teacher for 20 years, and we need it. All the arts, all the sciences, we need support.
Exactly.
The arts. Very much so. Malie, I think this book especially talks about she. I guess it's not too much to say that in the process of leaving her home, she does end up homeless and in a very scary situation, and she uses her art skills to get through the most difficult time in her life. She uses her memory of where she's from and shares that with the people around her, and everyone is strengthened by that. And I guess that's an example of how much all of us need to, whatever our creativity is, there are many different ways to be creative, but we really need to share our creativity with others. You never know how it's going to help somebody.
Exactly, Yumi. Where can we find more information on you, purchase your book, and learn more about what you do?
Thank you for asking. The wonderful publishers of Malie Under the Night Sky are Cinco Puntos Press, CINCOPUNTOS. I think it's press.org.
Okay, that's okay.
It's in the book. And I have a website, yumi.landowne.org, LANDOWNE. Yumi is my real name. My parents made it up from the words you and me, and it's spelled
all right.
Like it sounds.
Well, fantastic. I really appreciate you calling the program.